Hello and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into their work. I'm your host, Matt Coleman, and my guest this episode is Devin Clapp. Devin earned his BFA in printmaking from the Montserrat College of Art in 2006, and his MFA in painting from the Pratt Institute in New York in 2011. Devin often paints images that raise conflicting emotional responses from the viewer. Many of his pieces contain either combinations or juxtapositions of humor, sexuality, violence, the wilderness, and occult symbolism, and along with his loose, expressionistic style of painting, creates both a sense of intrigue and uncertainty. Join me as Devin discusses the real-life sources of some of these images and what he hopes to achieve in creating these scenes. Doing?
All right. How are you?
Good to meet you here.
Yeah,
you got your show up at what galleries at 7?
At All Projects.
Okay. And I saw your previous work online, and this seems like pretty direct continuation off of what you were doing.
Yeah, I feel like it is. There's parts. I feel like the color palette's bigger, sort of like the mark making, but it's kind of in the same vein.
Mm-hmm. So. It seems a little more frontal in some of the imagery, though, where.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah.
The older images were a little more obscure as to what was going on, where in this large
confrontational.
I can definitely see someone like peeing on the subway, it looks like.
Yeah.
And the person who referred me to you as someone to talk to was Peter Brofini.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I know Peter.
I think he went to Montserrat with you. Is that
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think he was a couple years younger.
And the way he described you was as a spiritual Bukowski, and I was wanting to know if you thought that was accurate, and if so, what he might have meant by that.
I've got a reputation for being kind of crass, kind of just speaking my mind, so I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of,
are you a good one?
I think the only thing, I've read two things by Bukowski. One was a fiction piece, I forgot what it was. It was about like a detective, but the other one was Post Office.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in Post Office, and like that week I probably gave like three or four people the finger while in traffic. I just like, this is like the best book I've ever read. It's just so vitriolic, and like just like, this is how it is, fuck you, fuck the entire world. I hate the Post Office. I loved it. And I had a horrible job at the same time as well, so I was totally just beating off it. Yeah.
Yeah, so... I guess what kind of energy is feeding into these pieces, would you say, then?
It's definitely, I guess a lot of them are kind of dark and morbid, but they're also kind of, I think they're kind of fun and flirty, too, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think definitely the colors kind of lend to that, like, fun and flirty kind of cupcake fairy sort
mm-hmm.
of
yeah, you got a really bright orange that's going through most of them now.
Yeah, and I've been using orange as, like, a ground for a while, but now I've been kind of throwing in a lot of like fluorescent pink and like this weird kind of acid green and that kind of stuff. So, and like all the darks are actually, I never use black. It's just like a mixture of like Prussian blue and like burnt umber and like
mm-hmm.
alizarin crimson, which is like a ton of medium in it. So,
mm-hmm. I think the smaller piece over there in the corner with somebody who's got a gun up their butt, I think that kind of embodies several conflicting like responses
yeah.
where I find it funny, but it's also like violent and sexual all in one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I guess it's there's a lot of like reading the news and everything in the world is just like there's a lot of confusion and kind of.
I guess is a lot of your work kind of about these kind of conflicting.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's maybe. When I, right before I started grad school, I picked up a book by George Bataille called Eroticism, which was all about the connection between, like, sensuality and death, and, like, how, like, they're kind of, they seem like polar opposites, but at the same time, they're kind of, like, oddly similar, especially in the currents, like, relating to, like, religion and art and other sort of mores in human society, very closely connected.
Is that something that you've always been interested in your artwork? Or?
I think so, yeah. Kind of trying to take two polar opposites and kind of bring them together, I guess. I think definitely when I was working on my graduate stuff, I was kind of like running along the lines of like trying to, I guess I was on the Fung Wah bus with someone who was like, oh, what's that book about? And I would just kind of like really just off the top of my head, I was just like, oh, I can't tell if I'm scared or horny, which is kind of like, I guess like distilling that like 300-400 page book into like, you know, like a sentence,
yeah,
a fragment of a sentence.
That was the title of your last body at work, right?
Or yeah.
And in that one, I read the quote as you want it to be like fun, the sensation of finding pornographic magazines in the woods.
Yeah, I'm originally from New Hampshire, so I spent a lot of time like growing up in the woods, and like you could just like walk around for an entire day without ever running into someone. But I remember on numerous occasions just like walking out into the woods, and like you wouldn't see anyone for hours, and all of a sudden there'd be like beer cans and porno magazines and like used condoms and like cigarette butts just like in this huge, and like clothes and this huge pile of like debris just in the middle of these like beautiful woods. And
yeah,
it's kind of like creepy, like in the way of like, oh, how long has this been here? Like someone else was totally out here, like at night probably, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was funny because I've had like a very similar experience where I'm from Kansas, and a friend of mine, he lives right outside the city limits, and we would go, like, since we were, like, five, you know, out in the woods, and I guess, like, 10 years ago, we were fairly old, but there was somebody who was living out there in a tent and with a few other people, and apparently he had, like, this big, just, like, trunk full of, like, porn magazines, because the place caught on fire. His, like, you could see that his tent had, like, melted, and I couldn't tell if it was intentional or if he had just like built his fire too close to the tent.
Yeah,
there wasn't a corpse there. I assume he got out of it. But what happened was it like burned all of these porn magazines and just turned it into like confetti, and it blew all over the field. So you just walk in this tall grass, and there's like little flecks of like clusters everywhere.
Okay, that's great.
So I think their original series type of I can't tell if I'm scared or horny. Really, kind of captured that sense of
And the woods are like traditionally kind of in like literature, this kind of place where people go that are on like the outskirts or fringes of society to go and be by themselves. Mm. And everything from like people living in like hobo jungle to like Johnny Appleseed to like witch cults in like medieval Europe.
Yeah,
kind of just like run off into the woods.
And all of those pieces, as far as I remember, they were like actually set in the woods, and you kind
I believe so.
You kind of carry that through in some of these pieces, but most of them are kind of moving into more urban settings. Is that interiors?
There weren't any interiors in the last one. I think in this one, there's like, well, some of them were kind of ambiguous, but there's definitely like that one, like someone pissing on the hamburger helper glove. That's definitely like.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a rest stop next to the woods, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interior, and that one, this one.
Yeah, I was curious about the hamburger helper only because that's the only one where there's like a recognizable kind of icon, whereas all the rest of this is really like generalized and ambiguous.
I kind of like, one of my biggest pet peeves is like meeting someone who is just like absolutely nothing to like contribute, or they're just, they have no interests or hobbies, and I'm just kind of like, really kind of, I can't really imagine a worse hell than like living behind like a white picket fence and coming home from like your shitty job and cooking hamburger helper and watching like American Idol. Like, I have no interest in that whatsoever. It's my skin crawl.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of like the hamburger helper is kind of this kind of American cultural icon. So
yeah.
I mean, that's my take on
and in the one scene over here where you have something out in the woods, it's got this kind of alien standing there with the deer. Where are you pulling that imagery from, or what?
I have a friend who had a friend whose mom was friends with this astrophysicist who I guess he taught at Harvard or something, but they like ended up hanging out with him and like smoking a bunch of pot. And this guy, like, they went to, like, a UFO convention.
Yeah.
And there was some talker who was discussing about how, like, aliens, maybe they aren't really kind of, like, corporeal, like, physical entities, but kind of, like, trans-dimensional holograms, and maybe they could, like, cloak themselves, which isn't a particularly new idea, but he was, like, giving the example of, like, well, if you're driving at night, like, and you see a bunch of deer walk across the road, maybe they're really aliens instead of deer, and that kind of... Coming from New Hampshire, where I've seen a ton of deer just, like, out walking in the woods at night, and that, like, scared the shit out of me. And I've always kind of, like, been afraid of aliens in, a weird way.
Mm. Did you ever see anything paranormal out there in the wilderness?
No, not particularly, but there were definitely, I remember, places in the woods that kind of, like, had a really weird, uneasy kind of feeling that you would just kind of, like, shy away from. Or, like, if, like, you were talking about that guy's camp in the woods, I remember there was a place... When I was in high school down by the river and, like, the train tracks kind of, like, on the outskirts called, like, Hobo Jungle. So it was anyone who was kind of transitory would just, like, set up camp down there. And, like, stuff would wash down the river. People would build huts out of it. I remember there was a guy who had, like, a hut made out of an upturned, like, jacuzzi that he had found floating in the river. But, yeah, you would find, like, much like what I found in the woods, like, when I was younger, just, like, empty 40s and, like, condoms and just pornography and, like... Just kind of debris out of the woods. Mm. Like, almost like a crime scene. Figure out what happened.
Yeah. I guess coming from such a rural environment to New York and living and working here, what's that transitional experience like?
I was worried about it before. I mean, because definitely, like, growing up in New Hampshire, there's more trees than people. And it affords you a kind of, like, anonymity. But you'll still recognize, like, the guy with the lazy eye who works at the gas station, or, like, the crazy woman who was, like, a station wagon filled with stuffed animals. But, I mean, once you're, like, out in the woods, like, you have this anonymity, whereas, and then I kind of noticed in New York that there's so many fucking people here that, like, you're totally anonymous. Like, no one gives two shits about you, really. I mean, you'll recognize someone once in a while, but for the most part, like, you can just go about your day or... completely anonymous. That's awesome. I love it.
If you see a person here, you're probably never going to see.
Yeah, you'll never see again. Chances are. Excuse
me. And it's actually pretty weird when you do see someone twice. Like, there was this guy wearing this kind of a welder's mask on top of his head, on top of a hat yesterday, and I saw him, like, twice within a couple hours. It was in the same neighborhood, so it wasn't that weird. But
I've had kind of, like, weird experiences like that where I do primarily art handling, and, like, I used to do a lot of trucking, and, like, I would just be, like, up in Chelsea and then the Upper West Side and then, like, Gowanus and Brooklyn, stuff like that, and I would, like, run into, like, three or four people I knew, which was just always a weird thing for me. I don't know if that was most of the people I work or friendly with or also in some sort of, like, arts related field and also do art handling, but even besides that, just seeing someone, like, I took drawing classes with in, like, middle school. Like, I saw him on the subway, like, three times in, like, 6 months, and I was just,
yeah, it's
like,
weird.
This is weird. This is really, really weird.
Or I guess coming from a place where you're able to, like, go and walk around the scenery so much, do you still find time to, like, do that kind of exploration?
I'll go around and, like, walk around, like, late at night, like, headphones on. Mm. It's nice when there's no one else out. And, like, early in the fall, I was working for Philips and doing, like, a lot of late night installs, and I would just get out of work and get home at, like, 3 in the morning and just, like, not be able to sleep because you've been, like, working for, like, 14 hours and your brain is just, like, fried from coffee. So I would just go walk around at, like, 4 in the morning around Bed-Stuy. There's no one out. It's awesome.
Yeah.
When the birds come out, it's kind of nice.
When you're... I guess since your work is kind of informed by these things that you discover when you're out, like, walking around, do you ever think about, like, doing work that's on location and based off of that stuff, or do you just kind of, like, mentally collect things? And
Mentally just kind of collect things. Ultimately, if I run into something weird, I'll take a picture of it, but I've never really done any sort of on-site painting. In regards to, like, this kind of work, I guess when I was, like, younger, I would, but not for this stuff now.
So. What kind of work were you making before your previous body of work?
I studied printmaking for 4 years in undergrad, and then I did some printmaking and took, like, 3 or 4 years off between undergrad and grad school, and I came into Pratt as a printmaker, and I think I made, like, 3 prints, and then I was like, man, printmaking sucks. I hate this shit. So I started drawing, and like I had a blast. I was just, and I was always working like fairly small, and like I remember the first drawing I did, which was really liberating for me, was I just had this like huge wall, and I was just taking like every scrap of paper I could find and like gluing it together, and this drawing just kind of like grew until it was like maybe 30, 40 little sheets of, from like 18 by 24 to like smaller sheets of paper, just like pasted onto the wall and drawn on it. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then out of that, I started painting. And I haven't really painted since, in fact, I had a teacher at Montserrat tell me I should stop painting. I remember saying, that's bad. So I was kind of stopped painting. So I hadn't really painted since I was like 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surrounded by people who were more classically trained in painting. Whereas I, and I had some of that, but I hadn't painted in probably almost 10 years. So it was,
why did they tell you to stop painting?
They were like using the wrong colors and all that shit. And I just, like, I didn't want to paint like bowls of fruit all day. Like, so I mean, pretty, I can still paint the bowl of fruit, but like, if I want to make the apples like neon purple, like, who gives a shit?
So it's just a pretty formless teacher.
Yeah.
Valued the craft of this, but it's
so I kind of like had to relearn it, which is kind of fun because I don't really pay attention to certain things, I guess, that might, like, I have a lot of friends that are, like, very hardcore painters, so they'll, like, be talking about things, and I'm like, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about right now.
Yeah, it does seem like you were pretty large scale from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I know, most of the stuff in this show is actually smaller than the stuff that was in my thesis show.
Yeah.
So, and the stuff is also stretched. Everything in my thesis show wasn't stretched. Mm-hmm. It was just on canvas. It was like nailed straight to the wall.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular reason why you went for that kind of presentation for the effect, or just that was what you wanted?
I think at the time it kind of lent itself to the work, I guess. Kind of the paintings were very kind of messy, and I didn't feel like stretching them really. They were easy to store that way. So it's like a number of small factors that came together.
Back to some of your current images that we're looking at here. Can you explain like some of the more obscure ones, like that one over there?
That's the Olsen twins, but they're conjoined. Okay. I've kind of been doing like something related to the Olsen twins each year for the past couple years, which is like something I never really sat down. I mean, I don't really give two shits about the Olsen twins, but it's kind of this reoccurring work theme of my work for the past couple years. So I figured I might as well just go along.
Just chronicle their growth.
Yeah.
You could start all the way at the beginning with the Full House years. And
oh, I could.
Yeah. And this one behind you, what's...
I spent a lot of time on the internet, like, researching. Like, I read a lot of the news pretty regularly, and I kind of got really interested in what was going on in Syria, so I was just like looking up blogs like out of the Middle East and things, and you would just find images and like accounts and stuff of what was happening that there was, it would never make it into New York Times, the BBC. So this is one of the images I like found, and I thought it was like, it's an extremely violent image, but at the same time it's really peaceful for some reason.
What's happening in
this? It's two, I can't tell if it's like a murder suicide or it was two people that got shot, but
okay. And that's like directly taken from...
Yeah, one of the images that's directly taken from like a...
Are many of these taken from direct imagery at all, or...?
Some of them, I don't know if any of them are like specifically I mean, the one of, like, the guy had to do with a handgun in his butt, I found that, and that was just something. It's just like, this, I need to paint this.
What kind of Google search string leads to that?
I mean, I don't remember. I mean, I really should take my Google search image history and, like, publish it sometime. I want to connect my name to it, but... A lot of these will either kind of come from personal experiences or things that I think are funny, or like there'll be an image I saw or a couple images that will kind of be like the root for it, and then I kind of like go from there.
Yeah, I was kind of assuming that this one of the guy that looks like he's peeing on the subway car was from
That's from real life.
Yeah, I've seen similar things too. It's puke, but like
I saw this guy. I was working for this place, and I didn't have a day off for like 3 weeks, and I was just like I was just like basically dead to the world. I was so out of it. I was working so much, and I got on the train. It was at Court Square. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I think. And I was like trying to stay awake, so I think I was listening to something like Nod or some kind of just like really atonal like noise music to try and like keep my eyes open. Mm-hmm. And, like, everyone's just, like, quiet on the train, and then there's this dude just sleeping on a bench, and then there's some, like, older, middle-aged Polish women, and some, like, dumpy-looking hipster girls, and, like, this, like, older black guy, and, like, the train starts going, and this dude just, like, the train kind of, like, breaks for a second, and this dude just, like, flaps over and lands on the floor, and he starts, like, moaning, and there's, like, drool coming out of his mouth, and this dude's obviously totally, like, jumped out or something. And this dude, he just, like, stands up, and everyone's like, oh, fuck, what the fuck? So everyone's just getting, like, really scared, which is awesome. And I'm like, I'm totally loving this. And I'm looking around, and, like, half the people are, like, scared out of their fucking minds. And people kind of, like, we're on the end of the train car, like, on the end of the train. So people, like, start to try and, like, walk by him. But at this point, he's, like, standing up, and he's holding onto a pole, and he gets his back to, like, most everyone on the train, and he's just kind of like swaying back and forth, and then everybody in the train starts fucking screaming at the top of their lungs and starts like running past this dude, and he's like flopping around, like blocking people, and this dude turns around and just fucking cranking his knob there, and there's just like fucking like slime coming out of it. Oh, and this dude, oh man, it was so gross. And then like people are screaming, and I'm totally just like, what the fuck is going on? This is what? Like, and I'm pissed because, like, I'm also mad because of my phone, the battery's dead in it, so I can't get a picture of this. Like, and I look over and I'm like laughing my ass off. And like, the only other person who's laughing is this like older black guy. And like, we're both just looking at each other. We're like, what the fuck? And like, we're just laughing our asses off. And then this dude is just, he starts fucking pissing all over the seats, like the walls on the train, and fucking like kind of lurches over and fucking throws up all over his dick and his shirt. And then he just kind of slouches up against the door like nothing happened, like he's like just like nodded off. And then we get, I think, to the Broadway stop. And like the door is open, and he just like that onto the like the platform, and people just like step over him and get on the train like nothing happened. It was like being at like a Gallagher show for junkies. It was just like fluid everywhere. It was like piss, like cum, vomit, just like puddles of it. And people were just like, oh, all right. We're like, and sit down. Like, and I remember going home and just like not being able to compute this. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around
that
it.
Sounds like a
for like at least like 2 or 3 days. Yeah. And it was kind of a time when I was like, I'd first got in the studio. I hadn't really worked on anything since like grad school, and I was really like, man, I gotta start working again, and I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna paint though. And like then this happens, and I'm like, oh, all right. So this is like the first painting out of like all of these that was started. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what set the tone for the rest of the show, because like that guy being the ultimate warrior, basically. Like if he had like been bleeding and like pooped his pants, it just would have been like the full death. Like, it would have been amazing.
So.
Yeah, that's hat painting. So
sounds like a really wild subway performance.
Oh yeah.
And I saw over in this piece here that there's like a SS officer.
Yeah, that's one of my bosses. Or former, he's not my boss anymore. This guy was just a total dick. And I was like, man, fuck like this guy. So I was just like, I'm going to paint this dude as a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Which is because I've had coworkers from that job after I got fired ask for like paintings of other bosses there. That's similar. So
you can make a whole series out of it.
Yeah, my boss, the Nazi.
And I noticed that there was another one over here that's, it's like a chandelier scene.
Yeah, I was kind of, it was like right after I finished that picture of the dude getting the gun in his butt, and like some of this stuff, and I was like, I'm going to try and paint the most boring thing I can. And I've been watching like a lot of the 60s like British Hammer horror films, like the sets are just beautiful, taking place in these like gothic mansions, and there's like chandeliers everywhere, so I kind of like had this newfound fetish for like chandeliers, and I was like, well, I mean, that's a fairly innocuous object, that's kind of cool, but it's also pretty boring. I mean, there's like no dicks or alien smoking joints in that painting, but I want to paint something really boring. So, yeah, it's called boring painting. So
self-reflexive.
Yeah, but it kind of came out as like oddly one of my favorite paintings on the show.
And this one over here also kind of has like that guy in the background kind of reminds me of these sort of occultish like stuff that you were talking about in the earlier series you did.
Yeah, I'm from New England. People have been living there for, it's a weird place. It sucks weather-wise. I mean, there's like 3 weeks in the fall where it's awesome and all the leaves are up. But like in the summer, it's hot and humid, and then it's like 0 degrees all the time in the winter. So it's like, no.
The global warming is starting to fix that. It's pretty awesome.
But it's got like a long, weird history of kind of people coming over from like Europe. I mean, there's a good chance that the Vikings were there like almost 1,000 years ago. And then you have all kinds of weird transitory people coming in and out of there. And then like the pilgrims and all that stuff. And it wasn't just like pilgrims coming over. Like it was just like anyone who was just like sick of like English society or out of Europe or got kicked out for being like a weirdo. It was just like shipped over here.
Yeah.
It's kind of like almost like what Australia was, but like of free will and enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But it has like a pretty long history of occult kind of stuff. So I remember like I lived in Salem for a year before I moved here, which was a really weird experience, like going to work in the morning and there's people walking around with witch hats on.
Yeah, I work in Salem too.
Oh, okay, alright.
I lived in Beverly, like Montserrat.
Yeah, there's a weird air about that entire.
It's like so many places like embrace it, not even like willingly necessarily, but that's just like what brings in the tourists and the money. And so it's this kind of strange, like hokey commercialized version of witches, and there's like real witch shop.
Yeah, there's real witches.
You've got authentic like fake
witches. Like. Yeah. That's totally bizarre. And that whole, like, Salem's whole tourist industry, it's like, and like fucking, like, Ferris wheels. I remember seeing, like, a hot dog cart with, like, strobe lights and, like, a fog machine on it playing, like, haunted house sound effects at, like, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, this is great, but, like, all this is because of, like, some, like, really horrible, heinous shit that went down, like, 400 years ago. But now it's this giant, beautiful, like, carnival attraction.
Yeah,
it's like if they put, like, an amusement park in Jonestown. And, like,
I thought it was weird immediately when I moved there, and, like, I was like, Salem is famous for, like, killing witches, and now they're all about witches.
Yeah, they're all about it, even the, like, little logo for the town has a witch on it.
Yeah,
the
it's cop like a witch
cards have, yeah, like, the cop cards have, like, a witch and a broom on the side.
It's
totally hokey. It's kind of awesome.
Is there much of that, like, actual history of in New Hampshire too? Like,
there's a fair amount of kind of up on the seacoast, and then there's just Vermont too. That's kind of all these people that just like lived down on the fringes, and then there's a lot of like Native American folklore and stuff like that, and like pilgrim, like Indian and Viking wars and that kind of stuff out there.
Is there a lot of like the ghost hunter people and stuff?
Yeah, I would say so.
Do you know any good supposed ghost stories that are famous in that area?
Nah, not really. I broke into an abandoned insane asylum in Concord, New Hampshire when I was in high school with some friends, and that was like really fucking scary.
Yeah.
And now there's like a haunted taco restaurant in Nashua.
A haunted taco restaurant.
Yeah. Spooky tacos. Well, a lot of this kind of imagery is, I think some of it's like a cult based. I remember the last kind of body of work, a lot of it was very like literally kind of like in your face, like here's a witch hat, like that kind of stuff. And I kind of feel that like the occult has become what like skulls were like 10 years ago in Chelsea. Like you couldn't walk into a gallery without seeing a fucking skull. So I kind of made a conscious effort to like move away from that direct, but I mean there's still things in this that kind of echo those theses. So.
Yeah, and in some of your older pieces I remember there was one that was called, there were two figures and it was like they got lost trying to go somewhere.
Oh yeah, it was something like Poop the Clown and the Red Witch or some shit like that. Yeah.
I was wondering like where some of these like figures that you came up with in that earlier series came from. And, like,
where a lot of them came from like getting drunk with my friends in the woods and like just like bringing costumes along and like videos, making videos out of that.
Or most of that based off of like real people or real.
Yeah, a lot of that show was based off of like pictures of my friends and just like in the woods being weird. So, maybe the colors kind of, a lot of the colors are definitely kind of taken from like cinema, specifically like Kenneth Anger's sort of color palette and like Derek Jarman's, like his film like The Gardens of Luxor. His high chroma colors are kind of just washed, especially like the orange is definitely like a Derek Jarman sort of reference.
I've seen that movie that might be in that same vein called Suspiria, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Those Italian 70s, yeah. Those
kind of psychedelic horror movies.
With like, and they don't make movies like that anymore. Like, you'll have some with like green spotlights on their face. Like, that just, it doesn't happen anymore. Just like over the top gore that's like kind of blurs the line between where like scary becomes stupid. So.
I guess now that we've seen like a little bit of transition between this show and your last show, like where do you kind of anticipate that things are heading for you?
I don't know.
Never know what you're going to find out in the woods.
I started a couple like small, like 8.5 by 11 paintings last week after taking like a month off. I was using like a lot of like thick gunky paint left over from painting these and kind of the really kind of textured, which is, I'm just kind of like fucking around with that stuff. I'm happy with the direction things are going in. So.
Well, it's good talking to you.
Yeah, you as well. Awesome meeting
you.
See you around. Yeah, thank you.
And that concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest, Devin Clapp. You can find his work online at devindunhillclapp.com. You can also learn more about me at my website, mattcoolman.com. If you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation through PayPal to studiosessionspodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee that I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit bigredandshiny.com for future episodes, along with other high-quality arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions.